Talk Show.
Recorded live.
What up, people? This is Speak It Like You Think It Radio. I'm your host, Nas. Intro music provided by Mike Mongo. New single, Stash. Check it out. Tonight, I'm joined by the all-star cast plus a special guest. Tonight, I'm joined by Hawks101.com blogger, studio engineer, the great Gordon Robinson. What up, Gordon?
What's going on, man? You already know. I'm motto for the week is I may not be right, but I ain't never wrong, man.
Hey, that's where it's at. We're also joined by fantasy football genius, Cowboys fan extraordinaire, who made his debut on the TV show on USA Today, Necessary Roughness, last week. The one and only James Roberts. What up, James?
Yo, what up, Nob? It's your boy. I'm trying to do a big for the 2013. I'm going to try to do one more show if I can.
Hey, man, don't get too Hollywood on us, man. And we're also joined today by a special guest from DraftUtopia.com. Hopefully I'm saying that right. Correct me if I'm wrong. But Chris Ransom from DraftUtopia.com. Is that correct, Chris?
That's correct.
Okay. Definitely check Chris out, man. Good insight on the NFL draft. Get an idea about what your team's doing and what the prospects are looking like.
I just want to say I'm really excited about tonight's show, and it's an honor to work with everybody here.
Oh, man, thanks, man. Dude, we always love when you come on, man. Like I said, last time we had no idea. You shocked the hell out of us with your knowledge and basically with giving us good info, man. We need that all the time. With that said, that's what we're going to start the show off with, man. We'll get to the Super Bowl later. Right now we want to talk draft talk. There's a lot of teams that are not in the Super Bowl, so their fans need to know about prospects, man. Can you give us the top 10 on your big board, man?
Well, the number one and number two prospects are both from Texas A&M. In terms of Luke Jokel and DeMontre Moore, Jokel protected Johnny Manziel and last year's first-round pick, Ryan Tannehill. And Manziel's undersized. Sure, he's a hell of a football player, but I feel like Jokel took a lot of credit, and he's an underrated aspect to this team. I also like DeMontre Moore. He had 12 and a half sacks. He reminds me of Von Miller, and the Jaguars need a guy like him. There's some other teams in the market for Moore, maybe the Detroit Lions at number 5, Oakland Raiders at number 3. He's going to be a highly coveted pick. Geno Smith's hands down the top quarterback in a very pedestrian quarterback class. A guy at deep nose tackle that's expected to go very early is Starlo Tulele. He has some 3-4 versatility. You can put him in a 4-3 scheme. And I think he's a guy that could be a top 5 pick. Eric Fisher out of Central Michigan, he had an excellent Senior Bowl week. There's some saying he could go ahead of Luke Jokel. I think that's just hot stove talk, though. But there's a lot that could happen. Bjorn Werner out of Florida State. My favorite player is Jarvis Jones, but he has a spinal issue with an injury. He had 13 and a half sacks as a sophomore and then topped that with an NCAA best 14 and a half sacks this year. But that injury with the spine is going to knock him down on some boards, and I just think that's child's play. Jones is my favorite player among the prospects.
Hey, Chris, let me ask you a question. Is it possible that Alec Ogletree could go before Jones?
It's possible. But very unlikely, since there's going to be a lot of teams in the market for pass rushers. You look at the Jaguars at number 2, the Raiders at number 3, the Lions at 5, Cleveland at 6, Arizona at 7. The list could go on and on. Jets, Titans, the Dolphins. I mean, the Steelers are looking at a pass rusher with James Harrison's contract. Heck, the Saints might even want one. I mean, pretty much every team in the top 15 is considering a pass rusher, but only 12 will end up flirting with the idea of taking one at the end of the day.
Okay.
Well, Chris, I got a question for you. I mean, no secret, we make no bones about it being the Falcons guy right here. From my assessment, Falcons need, one of three different positions. and then all the, well, two of the three are defensive. One defensive tackle, possibly try to create some help for some of the pass rush, also stopping the run. Two is an outside linebacker, like you were just talking about getting some pass rush once again. And then three, maybe a tight end, with the consideration of Tony Gonzalez being getting ready to retire at the end of the, well, you know, once he finally makes his mind up before next season. Real quick, outside of Lotulelei, what possible defensive tackles may be in that area of, well, I think we pick around 28th, 29th, 30th, around somewhere around that range?
Well, there's no question that Jonathan Hankins and Sheldon Richardson, two underclassmen at defensive tackle, are going to be top 20 picks. Where they go remains to be seen, but I got Hankins currently slotted at Carolina at 14 and Richardson to the Saints, Carolina's division rival, at 15. Sheldon Richardson's a better version of Ziggy Hood coming out of college. Whether he translates like Hood remains to be seen, but he reminds me a lot of Ziggy Hood, the Steelers' first-round pick from 2009.
Hmm.
No, would it be? Would it be?
There are some defensive tackles at the end of the first round, like Benny Logan, LSU underclassman, Jesse Williams of Alabama, who led the Crimson Tide to the national title. They put him in at fullback on some plays. He's 6'4", 320 pounds. Even with a bad 40 time, he's got the speed to be an imposing pass rusher off the snap or stop the run with stout run-stuffing ability. He's got gritty blocking skills, and he can just make some plays. And John Jenkins is a guy from Georgia. He could end up in that first-round range as well.
Okay. And another question real quick. Even though you mentioned Geno Smith, Geno Smith benefiting from, you know, being a subpar QB class this season, is he also going to benefit from the Colin Kaepernick RG3 type thing, what deal where everybody knows he can run, even though he's not a run first type guy? He would much rather be a pass first quarterback, but would he benefit from this whole rush of the read option play?
It depends on the team that drafts him, because I don't see him as a polished quarterback like Andrew Luck or RG3 that can just step in and make plays regardless of what happens. If he goes to a team like the Kansas City Chiefs, they put the right pieces around him, I think he can be the rookie of the year like Cam Newton was in 2011. But if he slips to a team like Arizona or Buffalo, then he could potentially bust because they might not have the pieces to accommodate him. He'll have Larry Fitzgerald, but is he going to have protection? Our team's going to think, oh, he's going to run first or he's going to pass first. He'll be too predictable. He might have some rookie growing pains.
And you talked about you talked about the quarterback situation. Does that make O-linemen get a little more value this year? And if so, do the Bears make that move this year early?
Absolutely. Offensive linemen are always in a dire state. You can always find players and upgrade up front in the trenches. And besides Fisher and Jokel, there's some other linemen in this draft class. Chance Warmack out of Alabama, you saw him against Notre Dame in the national title. I'm pretty sure everybody watched that game. Just Alabama manslaughtered the Fighting Irish.
Yeah.
And then there's another player, Jonathan Cooper, North Carolina offensive lineman. He can play anywhere on the interior offensive line, and he's not an offensive tackle type of guy, but he's a guy that's going to sneak into the late first round.
Keeping it around the quarterbacks, I didn't get a chance to watch the whole game, but I did watch a good little piece of the Senior Bowl, and I saw that EJ Manuel kind of had a pretty decent performance that day. Do you think he helped this draft start any with that performance, or it just the minds are made up on what EJ can do, and his inconsistencies at Florida State are just that?
It's interesting with EJ Manuel because he's got the cannon arm, he's got the physical tools, the scrambling ability. There are questions about his consistency, his accuracy, his leadership. At one time, he was slotted in as a fifth-round prospect, but after his performance in the Senior Bowl, I think he's in competition with guys like Tyler Wilson, Tyler Bray, Ryan Nassib for a chance to move up on the draft boards. He really helped himself this week, and I currently have him slotted to the Philadelphia Eagles in the third round of my mock draft. A lot could happen, though. If he has an impressive combine, boom, his stock's going up.
Yeah, that is interesting, him and Chip Kelly out there.
Well, James, the thing about EJ hasn't made his bones at all as a runner. I mean, yeah, he can move a little bit, but there are very few and far between instances where he just take off.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, once again, just keeping it quarterback, just because that's kind of been my thing for the day so far. And this has just been, I think somebody asked me a little earlier, and I kind of threw my opinion out there, and I just wanted to see if you agreed or disagreed. With the way that the draft, well, I say, with the way that the offenses are being set up, with the run option, and these quarterbacks are coming out here, and they're kind of being in more danger, you know, with the run first, read option type quarterback, like I said, Kaepernick, RG3, Cam Newton. After a while, I believe that some of these quarterbacks are going to start to get hurt a little more often. And when that happens, it'll probably be where the quarterback position start to turn into what we know of as the running back position, and these offensive linemen will be the ones getting paid the most money consistently day to day. Offensive linemen and defensive linemen.
That's an interesting theory. The quarterback's still considered the most valuable position in sports because of everything he has to do, using eye contact to read the defense, making the right throws, the right checkdowns on short, medium, deep accuracy. Quarterback has so many responsibilities, conducting himself like a leader, portraying character. It's just, I think quarterbacks are still the most important pieces to an NFL franchise. Just look at how the Chiefs performed this season. Still, I think the value of offensive linemen in this league has increased, and the importance of having a quality backup or even a third stringer that can step in occasionally is increasingly valuable.
Yeah, but piggybacking off of what Gordon just said, wouldn't a team like the Kansas City Chiefs now say, okay, well, instead of investing this huge amount of money in Alex Smith or somebody, why not just go in the middle rounds and grab two pretty mobile guys and try to read option our way through a season? You think that's possible?
I think it's possible. This is a horrible quarterback draft year. It wouldn't surprise me if the Chiefs said, we're not going to take Geno Smith. Let's take Jokel with the number one pick. We'll do something boneheaded, get a receiver in the second round, and then maybe we'll get a guy like Tyler Wilson or E.J. Manuel in the third round. And if things don't work out, we can spend a first-round pick on one of the quarterbacks in next year's draft.
Right.
That's unlikely, though, because the quarterback position is just so coveted.
Once again, like I said, bringing it back to here in Atlanta, with Tony Gonzalez possibly being 95% on the looking at the retirement papers, everybody is always directing me to Zach Ertz and I think it's Tyler Eifert from Notre Dame. I know Ertz. I've seen his game a little bit from watching some Stanford games. Hadn't really watched a whole lot of Notre Dame outside of the national championship game. But if you can kind of hit those two guys, like, you know, what you know about those two guys, and if it would be wise for Atlanta to pick one of those two players as opposed to going reaching in and try to get like a Dallas Clark or somebody else who may be on the free agent wire.
Absolutely. The Falcons need a long-term answer at tight end, and if they're going to take one, they got to do it in the first round. Zach Ertz, even with the departure of Kobe Fleener, he's been able to run crisp routes. He's been able to catch the football with his soft hands. He can block effectively in the running game when Stanford calls running plays. Notre Dame's Tyler Eifert has been productive as well. He was more of a blocker this year, but he's shown the ability to make plays and capitalize in critical situations. When Notre Dame struggled last year in terms of generating points, whenever Michael Floyd wasn't making plays, the Irish relied on Tyler Eifert to step up, and he was very productive. He was actually more productive in 2011 than he was this year in 2012.
One last question for me is, looking at the draft, and I'm pretty sure you've seen the board and how the picks are set up, and I'm pretty sure you've probably gone through a mock draft 3 or 4 times in your mind. What team do you think stands to benefit the most coming out of this draft, whether it's because they have the best positions to draft or the best just the most draft picks that this year? You know, who do you think benefits the most? Who comes out in your mind that if they make the decision that you think they should make, would benefit the most?
Well, there are a few teams. If Cleveland gets a pass rusher at 6, they've drafted well over the years, but they've just got to get the right coaching staff and applying themselves. And you're probably laughing. The Browns suck. They're not going to do shit until they actually win 4 in a row. That's the typical Cleveland syndrome because they've sucked each year. But I'll give you a legit team. The Miami Dolphins have 5 draft picks in the first 3 rounds. And if they draft the right players, they get an offensive tackle in case Jake Long leaves. You get a number one receiver for Tannehill to throw to. You get a cornerback to replace Vonta Davis. You get another pass rusher to complement Cameron Wake. Miami can be a team that potentially gets 9 or 10 wins. Maybe they sneak into the playoffs.
Mm. Yeah, that's good.
That's a good call.
Hell yeah. If you have any draft questions or ideas about the draft, man, definitely go to draftutopia.com and check out Chris's site. Very insightful, good knowledge there. Now, Chris, what is your background, man, just to let people know where you came from before you even got to starting your own website, man? What did you do before that sports-wise?
Well, I've been watching football games since I was 8 years old. I got a New England Patriots, Green Bay Packers, Super Bowl 31 tape still on VHS. I could get into all the details, but my first writing gig for fun was at Root Sports when I was 19. I helped Rant Sports out tremendously. They became Rant Media Network during my 2 years there, and then I decided, you know what? I'm going to challenge myself. I'm going to start a sports website. I worked for NFL Mocks for a brief period, getting some articles up. And I said, I want to step up to the plate and challenge myself and see how far I can go.
Mm. Definitely, man. Yeah, I read a lot of your story looking at your website, man, learning about you. So it's good to see somebody out here, man, willing to put it on the line and go out there for themselves. And your Twitter handle is?
@CMRRansom. Remember, it takes hard work and being passionate about something like I was with sports. Since you were like 8 or 9, if you want to be a CEO or like a website owner when you're 21, you've got to commit to it. You can't just jump in and say this and that. You've got to apply yourself consistently.
Yes, sir. 100 on that, man. I agree. Chris, before you get out of here, can you stay on for the first couple of football topics? Because we're going to stay NFL. You know this is Super Bowl week, man, so it's up.
Real quick, Chris, if I could, man, I just thought about it. It just hit me. One more question for the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Marcus Lattimore, he's been one of the biggest, you know, puzzles that people, you know, have been talking about through, you know, in reference to the draft. What do you think, man? What do you think he'll fall? Is he a third round pick, you know, fourth round? Does he have to show something at the combine? Or, you know, what do you think about Lattimore?
Marcus Lattimore had 2 injuries as a sophomore and a junior. And with all the running backs in this year's draft, I don't have him in my 3-round mock draft. I even got Jonathan Franklin, the UCLA back, ranked ahead of him. Marcus Lattimore is really going to have to stand out at the combine. He's going to have to run a killer 40 time, or he's going to have to do something that just wows me, because there are so many underclassmen in this draft. There's at least 10 or 12 running backs that are underclassmen, plus the seniors like Franklin, Monty Ball, and Stephon Taylor that stepped up and made some plays happen at the Senior Bowl.
Right. Man, that is crazy. It's such a storied career, man, to see that guy go down like that. Hopefully he interviews well, and like you said, he shows well at the combine.
Yeah, he deserves to be drafted. I hope he goes in like the 7th round and he just takes the NFL by storm like Adrian Peterson did. And all the other teams that passed on him, they just, why didn't we get this kid? I want him to be the Tom Brady of running backs.
Yeah.
And see, that was the reason why I was asking once again, you know, with Atlanta interest at heart. I was hoping that you would say something similar to that, what you just said, basically thinking that he would slide. And in my mind, could possibly, if he shows anything worthwhile at the combine, could possibly be one of these steals at the draft. Like I said, a day two, maybe day three pickup, and he comes in and he just blows everybody's doors off because he has a point to prove. You know what I'm saying? So that's the way I was leaning towards it.
Yeah, definitely, man. So, Chris, you going to stay on with us for a few?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, it's Super Bowl week out there, fellas. So we got to talk Super Bowl, Ravens, 49ers. But before we do that, we definitely got to go to the side stories because all of the side stories, it's media week. It's crazy down there. Now, the first thing I want to bring up, we're going to go into Ray Lewis. But before we get into the antler controversy, I just want to bring up something I found on Deadspin, man. There was somebody in the comment section, Mr. Jones. Now, you know it's crazy if I'm going to a comment section of a website. But I just want y'all to hear this guy out. Ray Lewis, 17 seasons, 228 games, 1,336 tackles, 41 sacks, 1 safety, 67 passes batted down, 31 picks, 17 forced fumbles, 1 Super Bowl ring. London Fletcher, 15 seasons, 240 games, 1,685 tackles, 37 sacks, 2 safeties, 73 batted passes, 23 picks, 18 forced fumbles, and 1 Super Bowl ring. Did anybody know that their numbers were so comparable? London Fletcher and Ray Lewis. And that's Ray with 2 extra seasons.
No, I did not know that. And that just validates how underrated London Fletcher is. He's been such an influential player on defense over the years in terms of calling the plays, recognizing what the quarterbacks do. And I think a lot of NFL fans take London Fletcher's game for granted.
Yeah, I agree. James?
Yeah, I didn't know anything about that. But, yeah, I know London Fletcher has been around for a while. I didn't know his – but, you know, actually Ray Lewis missed what? I know he missed the whole season.
Yeah, but, well, that kind of evens out, though, because Ray's played – that's why he has a total of 228 and London has 240. So even right. though Ray's been in 17 and London's 15, London has more games played.
But the thing about that, though, is I think what you have to look at is you have to take into account that, one, Baltimore has been a team that has been in the public eye for a whole, you know, for a long time. They started out with when Billick got in there, and they were on HBO Hard Knocks, and you got to know the guys. So, you know, HBO kind of took them, and they made them stars. One of the most – Ray Lewis has been one of the most recognizable faces in the NFL – for quite some time now. And then when you look at where London Fletcher played, I mean, he played at some lackluster places. He played at places like Buffalo. I think Washington might have been his best shot, you know, for fame. But Buffalo, St. Louis, he hasn't really had that, you know, that place of being in the spotlight to where people would really care and say, okay, he's playing for a winner. So –
yeah, it's that free agency syndrome. St. Louis
right.
had a chance to pay him instead of, you know, rebuilding like they did before. And, you know, if he stays there, he probably does become a big star. But like you said, he bounced around to some bad teams. But I'm just looking at these numbers. I was blown away when I seen this, man. I couldn't believe the numbers were so close. I don't know.
But
like I said.
But I do agree that their numbers are very comparable, but the thing, like I said, the thing about it is just where you play, who you've been, you know, who values you. You know, the media seems to push for Ray Lewis, and we've seen that just this season with this whole Super Bowl debate coming up, everything coming up, and people just jumping on Ray Lewis for one thing, and then the next thing, and then the next thing. So.
Yeah.
Some players are lightning rods, and some aren't. And some of these guys that aren't seem to get looked over. You know, London Fletcher's this guy that comes in and does his work.
Right.
Ray Lewis is, you know, yelling out Bible verses in front of the TV whenever he can.
I think the difference here is the media's bias towards Ray Lewis because he's
right.
been with the Ravens his entire career. London Fletcher's had some up and downs. He's still one of the best linebackers in the NFL. He's been more of a journeyman, though. He's played with 3-4 NFL teams since he entered the league, and people are knocking Fletcher because of that, because Ray Lewis has had a much bigger influence on Baltimore, and it's sort of a bias.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I'm not making an argument that London is better or London is equal or anything like that. I just wanted to throw it out there because, I've seen this on a message board, man. See, we always assume message boards is nothing but ignorance and anger, but every once in a while they'll give you a little something. But sticking with Ray Lewis, the antler controversy, do you care or do you really want to elaborate on this whole situation? Let me go to Gordon first.
I don't really care. I think it's interesting that that's what they're using. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think it's an interesting story. I mean, and one, there is no failed test. He didn't fail any test where he tested positive for performance-enhancing drugs. So the story should die right there. But I think it is rather ironic that the lengths that which professional athletes are willing to go to get themselves back in the condition, to heal their bodies, to get back in the game. We talk about this all the time about how the NFL needs to look out for players' safety, but they will do anything to get back on that field themselves. And for as much as people will say, and place the blame or the responsibility in the hands of the NFL, there's just as much to blame for players who aren't willing to say, no, I got my bell rung. I think I've been concussed. I'm going to sit down. I'm going to take this next game off, let my body heal the way it's supposed to. What they will do is they will lie, they will cheat, and they will get back on the field by any means necessary. And when you place the blame solely at the hands of the NFL, and then you turn around and you look at the fans, because the fans are booing because they don't want the game to change, and you're saying, oh, these guys are heartless and barbaric, whatever. But it's full circle.
Yeah.
It's not just the fans. It's not just the league. It's the players also. They're suing the league for not telling them the dangers of the NFL. I mean, once again, who has to tell you that you're getting hit in the head all the time? It's going to be dangerous.
Well, we'll go into that in a little bit, because we'll say that on Ed Reed's point. But I see what you're saying, but job security is number one, man. We've seen Kaepernick and Alex Smith. But let me go to James.
Yeah, man.
I know you were looking at the antler thing.
Yeah, the antler thing, that was pretty crazy. When I was listening to the guy explain everything, it was like some deer in New Zealand, their antlers grow faster than any other deer in the world. So if you inhale this spray or put it up under your tongue or something of that nature, it's supposed to be something that'll help you heal quickly.
But this is what I'm saying. Who thinks of this? Who thinks of that? You know what I'm saying? Who does the research and says, damn, that deer's antler grows faster than anybody else. I wonder if it'll help my torn ligaments heal itself up. Who does that?
I don't know, man. Chris, you're close
to this. And maybe you can answer it, James, because I don't know. What do they do to the antler? Do they grind it up? What do they do to where you can get it into a mist?
I think that's what they do, kind of grind it up or something. But you know what they say about idle minds?
Hey, man, that dude's running a successful business, man, coming up with stuff like that, though. Chris, your thoughts?
Well, I think it's gotten to Ray Lewis's head a little bit. He's not completely distracted by it, but he described the situation as agitated, not angry. Clearly, it's affecting him to some degree. It's something he has to hide, though, and because he's the leader of this defense, he's got to say, you know what, guys, we got a bigger issue. This is the Super Bowl. This is our last chance to win the big game because we got players that are considering retirement. We can't have this going on right now. 49ers are a young team. They're going to be around for a while, so this is tough. I mean, you've got to deal with the distraction of this magnitude during Super Bowl week. It's how you react to it that counts because you're either going to go down as one of the greatest linebackers of all time, already the greatest of this generation, or this is going to be your legacy, the deer antler incident.
Right, to get back on the field.
But I think in terms of that, though, Chris, I think he has a lot more time to get his mind back right. You know what I'm saying? I'd rather that these questions took place and agitated him, aggravated him on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday as opposed to Friday. You understand what I'm saying? Like we just talked about it coming off before we got on air, how when the Atlanta Falcons were there and Eugene Robinson, Saturday he was arrested. You know what I'm saying? Before the game for soliciting prostitution.
Right.
You know, if that happened that Tuesday or Thursday, you have kind of regroup, get your mind back settled in on, hey, we got a bigger goal here. But no, you were up all night waiting on a guy to get out of jail. You know, he had to make a speech. Guys had to listen to this stuff. It was a whole upheaval. At this point in time, Monday, Tuesday, you asking about deer antler spray.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, it's aggravating. It's a dumb question. I don't want to answer it, so I'll address it and I'll let it go. And hopefully I'll give a good enough answer that nobody else will say anything else about it again because I've covered it. And now we keep it moving. Now we can just talk about football.
I hope I know he's wishing that, but it's not going to happen. Let me move on, though, to Randy Moss. I got a little audio.
Receiver ever. I think now that I'm older, I do think I'm the greatest receiver to ever do it.
I think all we need is that statement. The one and only Randy Moss makes the statement. He is the greatest receiver to ever do it. In his mind, you know I'm a big Randy fan, so I always throw him as 1A. I know where y'all probably stand on this, but what do y'all say to Randy's statement, man? Let me go Chris first.
This is ignorant to the point where I just want to say child please on the air, but that's going to offend Chad Johnson, whatever the hell his name is now. And Jerry Rice is the greatest receiver of all time. It's not even debatable. If Calvin Johnson wins a couple of Super Bowls, maybe we'll put him up there down the line in 10 years. But right now, Jerry Rice is number one. And I think Randy Moss, if you judge him based on his character alone, he's not a top 10 receiver. But
whoa. Wait a minute, Chris.
Hold on.
Let
me make my point.
This is not a character judgment, though. We're talking about football players.
Okay. In terms of speed and athleticism, Randy Moss is arguably one of the top 8 receivers of all time, if not a top 5 receiver, because when he first entered the league, he owned defenses. He carved them. He torched them. He took secondaries to school.
No question. All I'm asking is talent-wise. So talent-wise, you say you could see possibly top 5. Well, you're talking about when you throw in character and as far as how he played the game, you don't even put him in your top 10.
In terms of character, no. In terms of overall talent, he's top 8 for sure, possibly top 5. And if he wins a Super Bowl, he is top 5. Case closed.
Okay. Interesting. I
just wouldn't count this Super Bowl because this Super Bowl, how much of a – unless he goes out and he has an explosive day. I mean, if Baltimore says, Crabtree, we're not going to let you loose, and Randy Moss is able to pop the top off the D and get behind Ed Reed or somebody and they hit him and he hits a couple big plays, then I say, okay, that's kind of solidified Randy Moss. But if Randy gets a catch for 18 yards, if he gets one catch for 18 yards or two catches for 36 yards, I'm not going to say this is the – and they win the Super Bowl. I'm going to say, oh, he's solidified because they won. He got a ring now.
Yeah.
My thing with Randy Moss is this, though. He's probably the receiver, the best receiver, who's had, who's never lived up to his potential in my mind. When I think of Randy Moss, it's pretty much what I think of. The guy has all the tools, had all the speed. How can you be 6'4", 6'5", and run a 4'2", 4'3", can catch anything? I mean, I've heard stories about him, this guy catching the ball in practice. You've seen it in games. I think Warren Sapp told a story when he was with the Raiders. As underused as he was, they would do different little drills, and this dude would be making catches behind his back. You know what I'm saying? We'd be catching balls behind his back. So, but he's never lived up to that potential. You hear all these stories about what he could do and what he could be, and it's woulda, coulda, shoulda, because he hasn't been that. Even when he put up these gaudy numbers when he was with the Patriots, I think that was their undefeated season. He didn't do nothing in the Super Bowl. I don't even remember him in the Super Bowl.
He got the catch to give him the
lead. He caught the go-ahead. He got the go-ahead touchdown.
Yeah.
Did he got up? Because I've been searching for, like, my Randy Moss moment in my mind. And typically when you think of somebody that's being the best, you say, okay, well.
Being the time you saying, have a, I got plenty of Randy Moss moments.
I know. I don't get where you're going so hard on Randy, man. I can understand
I'm saying,
I'm
going so hard because he's never lived up to his talent.
NFL Network did a top 10 list of receivers without a Super Bowl ring. Randy Moss is hands down number one on that list. If not, they need to redo the list and throw it in a garbage can.
Yeah, but I can't waste Super Bowl rings in that fashion just because
football is such
a team sport. It's just like
could you imagine what could have been if Randy Moss had actually played all the time? If Randy Moss had actually gone across the middle, if Randy Moss would have cared some of the time when he was being used as a decoy. I remember sometimes. He was being used as a decoy. Everybody knew he was a decoy. He wouldn't even get off the line. He wouldn't even break his stance. He would still be pointing at the referee.
That rate of footage of him coming off the line is classic.
I watched Randy Moss drop a touchdown pass that Kerry Collins threw to him when he's playing with the Raiders. He deliberately dropped that pass. He could have walked in the end zone.
But you can't say you're the best when you do stuff like this. When you have stuff like this on your resume, you can't be hogged out on the GOAT. You can't do that.
Yeah, that makes it tough.
You can't sit here and say I'm the greatest when you were, for a solid year, you went from New England, cut, Tennessee, cut, Minnesota. Well, I think he just retired at the Minnesota. And then just came back to San Francisco. He turned in his retirement papers and got back in the league. You can't sit there and, you know what I'm saying? And everybody knows your skills aren't diminished. Everybody can say, okay, well, maybe he doesn't run a 4-3 right now. Maybe he's a 4-4. He was clocked like a 4-4-5. I want to say that was
a genius, man. Randy's a genius, and when you're dealing with some people who are a genius in aspects, especially something like football, you'll have people who dealing with them is a problem. I mean, you'll have people who are too smart for their job that you work with that you tend to see are a problem.
You know what you just said?
He's too smart for what he's doing, man. He's a football genius, man. That's how I see it.
You gave him an excuse for being lazy.
No, it's not an excuse.
He's a guy who's had all the physical tools
and
didn't execute any of them.
Yeah, but when has he not been in shape? He's not lazy.
What has been in shape? Lazy is not always being in shape. Lazy is I don't want to do that.
Right. It's called
– and he's
guy,
done
this
guy
on many
occasions.
He's not a regular
saying,
football
I play
player
when I
in the
want
sense
to.
Of Randy will weigh what it's worth. Okay, you want me to be a decoy? I'm not even going to come off the line that hard. You want me to go over the middle? I'm going to do it with real staggered steps, Frankenstein-like, so I don't get blown up. That's what I mean. It's a guy too smart for what
that
he's doing
lazy.
As far as what football is.
That doesn't sound smart. It sounds lazy.
Well, it's not.
Instead of
saying,
lazy, I'm going to get behind the linebacker so that I can catch the ball in this window. I'm going
to
sit here.
It's not laziness, though. It's selfishness to the highest level, and it's also just a thing of a guy. Not that he doesn't want it. It's just it's not worth it to him as far as certain risks that other people would take. So I definitely wouldn't make him number one receiver, but he's one of my favorite players of all time, man. But yeah, I definitely would never make the argument of Randy is the greatest wide receiver.
And I agree with Chris that if if Calvin can continue on his path, I won't even throw in the fact that he has to win a Super Bowl ring, because as long as he's in Detroit, I don't think that'll happen. but if he can continue on his path of what he's been doing, a few more seasons like he's been having lately, man, I think he'll pass over Randy Moss. And that's just because they have similar tools. He's not as fast as Randy Moss, but he was willing to do what Randy Moss wasn't, and that sacrificed a lot of stuff for the team. And Randy Moss wasn't that guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Like I said, I think all of us are right, man. This is all just our opinions on Randy, and I think he's that kind of polarizing guy to where he's going to get all kind of different views and thoughts from people. But I don't know, man. One of the most entertaining guys we ever saw in the NFL. Moving into the thing you brought up earlier with Ed Reed, him talking today about basically saying that, you know, Junior Seau knew the consequences, and I think he's looking down from heaven smiling as far as this situation. Football players and now know, you know, what the drastic results can be from a football career.
May I announce something real quick? I found an interesting article, Reed, and I just want to get it out there real quick. It's just the Baltimore Ravens have been using Dennis Dixon during practice sessions to prepare for Colin Kaepernick, and there's talk that Chip Kelly is going to pursue Dixon as a quarterback. I'm not reading too much into this, but I think it's kind of interesting that the Ravens are using practice squad quarterback Dennis Dixon against the first team defense for the Ravens, because maybe this will give them an idea of how to deal with Kaepernick on Sunday.
I thought I brought that up sometime last week. I saw a report, something like that, last week. And
you did.
It's from FanNation, an SI.com partner.
Before we get to the Ed Reed thing, though, quick question. Before he got hurt, did you have Dixon Hyde that year, Chris?
Yeah, I had him as a second, late first-round prospect, and I thought he was going to creep up and challenge Matt Ryan.
But it's a new day and time, like we said, man. I mean –
yeah.
That was still a day and time when they told you the option wouldn't work.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So
that was BT, before Tebow, before we knew about the option out there in the NFL. But back to the Ed Reed situation. Gordon, you kind of touched on it earlier. Let me go to James just to get your thoughts, man. I know you're not a big fan of players trying to sue with this concussion issue, but what do you think about Ed Reed's comments?
Well, I mean, it's, at this stage, everybody know. I knew years ago that if I was blessed to have a son, I'd be like, I'd push him to baseball,
right,
or basketball, just because you see some of the injuries that the players have. I don't know if y'all ever saw the story they did on Earl Campbell.
Yeah, man.
And I was like, wow, I saw Earl Campbell. If you go back and look at him back when he played, I was like, this dude was the truth. But then you go back and look, like, they had him playing in the Astrodome on concrete with a little thin piece of carpet over it.
Yeah, I said basically carpet.
Earl left, Earl right, Earl up the middle. That's the playbook.
So, I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, okay, them players deserve to get that money if you got them doing stuff like that. I played one time when I was little. I fell down, slipped on some sand, fell down, skipped my arm up. I was like, let's go back to the grass.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, the NFL should have handled this a long time ago. It should have never got this big. They should have cut a check for them players, $100 million check for them players a few years ago. We wouldn't be talking about this stuff now. Everybody be getting paid. They'll be getting the proper medical treatment and stuff, and they done let it get out of hand. They wouldn't be fucking the game up
I hear you, man, but they ain't in the business of giving away money. You got to, you better build your case.
Well, if you make $9 billion and you cut these players $100 million just for healthcare expenses, they just wanted at that time they ain't really want they wanted a little money, but they just wanted their healthcare and all that stuff to be taken care of. And the NFL dropped the ball on that. They let it get out of hand because they was greedy. Now they want to change the game, want to eliminate kickoffs, man. They want to they brought the lines up 10 yards now, so there ain't really no kickoffs anymore. You might as well eliminate it because they're kicking the ball out the back of the end zone anyway. And so they're just changing the game. And from what I grew up with, and to me it's kind of next thing you know, they'll be talking about two-hand touch or flag football. So I'm like, it's almost the only thing it's good for almost now is just fantasy football.
Hey, someday, man, someday. Well, let me take it to Chris, but let me add the Drew Brees situation as far as his relationship with some of those veteran players. Let me get your thoughts on that.
His relationship?
Well, after those comments he made, you know what I mean? I don't know if he's the enemy as far as they're concerned, but could be. Chris, your thoughts?
Are we talking about Ed Reed's comments towards quarterback Joe Flacco?
No, his comments about Junior Seau knew what he was getting into.
I have no comment. I have no idea why he said that. I think it's kind of ignorant to an extent, and I don't know how this whole situation played out.
Yeah, and like I said, to add on as far as Drew Brees having a little tension with the older players when he said they shouldn't have blown their money and they're trying for a second shot at the trough. Chris, you still there?
Yes, I'm still there.
Oh, okay, your thoughts?
On Drew Brees?
Yeah, Drew Brees is situation with the veteran players?
Well, just the whole team dynamic is going to have to go through some changes. Sean Payton's going to be back, which is the good news, but the bad news is some of these veterans, they're out spending money. They're probably going to nightclubs, getting some groove on, getting some Mardi Gras beads, getting some girls, and that's pretty cool and all, but you got to focus on playing in the NFL first. And the thing is, some of the players that the Saints have are becoming free agents, and what they did, they re-signed Jarry Evans at right guard to a 5-year contract. They let Carl Nix go to Tampa Bay, a division rival, but compensated for that by overpaying Ben Grubbs a little bit, even though he's one of the best left guards. They re-signed Marcus Colston to a 5-year deal last offseason. So the Saints have overpaid some of their players. Jermon Bushrod at left tackle is an expiring contract. You got a lot of running backs for depth, including first-round pick Mark Ingram for 2011. So the Saints do have some players that they've overpaid to a certain extent. So if they're out partying, that doesn't surprise me. This is New Orleans after all.
All right. Let me move it to Gordon. Finish that one off.
Well, I look at it like this, man. In terms of Ed Reed, I don't think what Ed Reed said was ignorant at all. What I think was, I quote it like this.
I would say a little insensitive.
Yeah, it might have been a little insensitive, but it wasn't ignorant at all. I look at it like this. I'd say the same thing about a dude who started smoking crack in 2013. You know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? You can't look up at me 3 years later and was like, oh, but I was on crack and it was tough, man. No, you chose to smoke crack.
Yeah.
You understand? It just mean with football. With football, Junior Seau played in the 90s. And in the 90s, you had an opportunity to watch generations of football players go by. And that's where I'm getting. That's the link. That's the correlation. You had generations go by. You saw what happened to an Earl Campbell. You saw what happened to some of these old football legends. And they can barely walk and they can barely stand. They have dementia. They have Alzheimer's. You saw this.
Yeah.
And yes, I do agree with James in the fact that the lawsuit wouldn't be where it is if the NFL had nipped this thing in the bud and taken the opportunity to pay some of the guys who didn't have that opportunity to see the generations come before them. Because some of these set guys played in the 60s and the 70s, they didn't see what the effects were on this full course football, on this full, bigger, starting to get bigger, stronger, faster type football. They didn't see that effect. So they just went out and they played, and they didn't get that type of money that these guys are getting today. Those guys were playing football and then turning around in the offseason selling used cars.
Right.
So they weren't breaking bank. They weren't making millions of dollars. Yes, they were living the high life because they were known. But they were still living in regular neighborhoods. They weren't in the Hollywood Hills or in the top upper echelon of what you would imagine your whatever your city is. They were still living by next door to the guy who worked at the airport.
Yep.
You understand what I'm saying? So in terms of that, the NFL wasn't paying these guys big bucks, and they didn't have the example to look at to say, these guys over here messed up. I might want to set aside some cheese for a doctor's appointment at some point in time in my life. So I can have a, you know, not even know. They didn't even know what concussions were. You just saw stars or you got your bell wrong.
Yeah.
Go get some water and get your ass back in the game. If you were lucky enough to get water.
All right.
You know what I'm saying? So the NFL may have had some kind of idea, but those guys didn't. But now you come into the 90s. And these guys have seen the effects of bigger, stronger, faster football. You see the guys, the old veterans, coming in on walkers and canes, and you can't possibly sit there and tell me that you don't think that it's going to happen. It won't happen to you. You think you're going to play 11, 12 years in the football league, in the National Football League, where it's the cream of the crop, and you're not going to be hurt? You're not going to have a shoulder injury to where you can't even pick your kids up. You're not going to hit the floor. Like I said, AstroTurf was carpet in the seat and concrete, like your basement. Go hit your head on the basement a couple times.
It's not going to be me. Syndrome has always been a problem in everything, with everything. It's not going to be me. That was that guy. But
So I mean, but in reference to that, I think you've had examples. You know what I'm saying? You had examples of what could and probably will happen to you, no matter how much the team says you're okay, no matter how much the team doctor says you're okay. Oh, put on this helmet. It's the new cutting edge. You got a brand new phone, and you can run into a brick wall, and you'd be okay. No, still. And that's around the time, like the 90s, when you were starting to make money, and you could put aside some time for a doctor's appointment. You can set aside and get a real doctor's opinion as opposed to the team doctor's opinion. But I think a lot of it turned to, I don't want to hear what that guy has to say because he's going to tell me I shouldn't play.
Exactly.
I don't want to hear I shouldn't play. I want to hear you'll be okay. Put this helmet on, put this ball in your arms and get your ass back on the field. That's what I want to hear. So that's the doctor I'm going to. And now 20 years later, when you can barely remember your name, or you can barely hold a pencil to write it, now you want to sue somebody.
I have no problem with what you said. I disagree just because I'm on their side, but there's nothing.